Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Best People We Know radio show. This is where you'll meet experts and celebrities who share their success secrets with you to help you be your most successful best too. Your host, Deb Scott, is a certified professional coach at Discover the Amazing You Coaching and author of the award-winning motivational book, The Sky is Green and the Grass is Blue, Turning Your Upside-Down World Right Side Up. The Best People We Know radio show brings you powerful resources, effective ideas, and transformational tools you can use to educate, inspire, and motivate you to be your most purposeful, peaceful, happy best. So get ready to experience mind vitamins to feed your whole soul. Good change is about to happen. The Best People We Know radio show. Here's your host, Deb Scott.
Well, hello, everybody. It's such a privilege to be with you Thursday evening, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day. So wishing you those Irish blessings. And, of course, we, on another note, we are continuing to pray and keep our thoughts and prayers with the people in Japan. And, you know, it's just so close. All of us are so close and connected. So tonight, I think that you'll feel even more connected to a kindred spirit. We have an amazing guest tonight, and she has overcome things that you and I listening here couldn't even possibly imagine. Dr. Aura Imbaris, her book is actually up for a Pulitzer, but she is really a modern-day Anne Frank, and she's going to tell us her story, her journey, and how, you know, listening to her and the strength of the human spirit, how we can all come into discovering our authentic self through any adversity. And, you know, the world is filled with it right now. And I think that this is a very timely message and very powerful. So I'm really grateful that you're all here. And it is a real privilege to have Dr. Aura with us because she's a busy, 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 busy lady, and she's very difficult to get. We're hoping to have her on this morning, but she's a doctor, you know. She's out there teaching and working with so many people out in Los Angeles. But let me just, before we take calls and have her share her story, I just, you know, want to remind you to mark us as a favorite and follow us because we do have shows at different times depending upon when we can get these very highly sought-after national guests. And this evening's show is an example of that. So you can get the worry-free updates if you just hit the follow there in the front. And I really appreciate that. But let me just tell you a little bit about her if you hadn't read the bio and you don't already know about her. But, you know, really, Dr. Aura is a story of personal hope, freedom, and strength of the human spirit against all odds. And I mean against all odds. Millions of people do know Anne Frank, have read her diary, and have come to identify with her over the years. But how many expect to ever find themselves sharing in her experiences years down the road? Aura Imbaris, and you can go to her website. It's www.beautiful website. Beautiful girl. Go to her website. It's AuraLMbarus.com. A Romanian survivor and author of the critically acclaimed memoir Out of the Transylvania Night. She did. While Anne was hiding from the Nazis, Aura was hiding from constant gunfire in the violent streets of Transylvania during one of the most draconian regimes in the Soviet bloc. Communist dictator Nikolai, I'm going to not pronounce his name correctly, so I'll let you do that. Thank you very much. Had turned Romania into a land of imprisoned and politically oppressed zombies. Despite the daily atrocities being committed outside her house and at the risk of being killed, Aura escaped and fled to America, leaving everything behind except a powerful dream and hope for freedom. And I'm just going to take a quote from her and what she says and what she's going to help us do tonight. I want to live life to the fullest and in the process to help others along the way. I want to squeeze out each and every moment of life and use to the maximum because every day has the potential of a lifetime. Oh, Dr. Aura, it's such a privilege to have you with us here tonight. Thank you, and hello. Hello, Deb. Thank you so much for having me and obviously accommodating me, you know, due to my crazy schedule. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, you know, it's not every day we have Pulitzer Prize authors up here, you know. I mean, we have some very special people, but you're the first Pulitzer Prize potential person to win, and I know that you will, and we're going to keep you in our thoughts and prayers on that, because certainly your story is changing lives, and I just don't even know where to begin. I mean, maybe you could just tell us, you know, how did you escape? How did this all happen and start? And, you know, it's just, you know, how do we begin? There's just so much to dive into.
Well, obviously, because everybody has heard about Transylvania. And that, you know, Transylvania was first of all mentioned, you know, in a Latin document in 1075 as Ultra Silvam, which means beyond the forest. So it is the country or the county beyond the forest. And so Sibiu, the city where I was, you know, I was born in, is in the middle pretty much of Transylvania. And what is so interesting about Sibiu, it was in 2007 a cultural capital of Europe, and it was considered by Forbes the eighth most idyllic place to live in Europe. So consider this, after having the Romanian Revolution in 1989 and having parts of the city destroyed, and obviously because of the communist regime, so many people's minds have been manipulated for so many years, because Romania was communist, you know, since 1947 until 1989. So living in an amazing architectural city with a lot of cultures and heritage and ancient fortresses and temples and medieval towns and churches and, you know, you name it, castles that were in Baroque and Renaissance and Gothic. Some of them, I would say, perish, others lie in ruins, and others, I would say, endured, you know, throughout the passing of time, this turbulent history that Romania had. So the part of the world where I'm coming from is just not only a legend and a myth, but actually it's reality, because I get that all the time. I get questions from my students. So you were born in Transylvania. It's like, yes. So that place is actually real? It's like,
yeah.
Yes, it is. I was born there. So it's an amazing part of the world that you, right now, you know, it's not under communist regime anymore. We got rid, you know, of the communist regime in 1989 and has a democratic regime, and it's absolutely stunning. But just considering that only 22 years ago, this country was perceived in a totally different light. My last name, Imbaros, is Greek. So my ancestors, they came from Greece, they came from Athens, and some of the family was settling down in Sibiu, while another part was settling down in Austria, in Vienna. And their name was actually mentioned by, you know, prime ministers and famous historians in the Romanian history. And when they came and they settled down in Romania, they had properties, they had, you know, acres of arable land. Well, everything disappeared in 1948 when Romania is going to become communist. So Ceausescu is going to nationalize all the properties. So if you would have had, let's say, two homes, one would be taken away from you, and then the other one would have been measured to see exactly what's the square footage on your house and if they would be able to bring another family for you had too much living space. So all of a sudden, the country that I was not even born in, you know, I was born in 1971, but my parents and my grandparents, they saw Romania being literally a very successful one and then being demolished by the communist regime and, you know, taken to its knees.
It's just so people, you could, you know, so your family, they had, you had a house, you whatever, you saved money, worked hard, and
yeah.
Just gone.
Yes, in pretty much in 1948, banks and big companies, you know, in Romania are going to be nationalized. That's how it started. And so we lost all our properties. We were stripped of our properties, like acres of arable land, and we had green pastures and houses and money. And my ancestors, they used to own a carriage transportation business. So we were ordered to join the communist, you know, party, like so many other families in Romania. And we, all these properties were taken away from us. So from being a very wealthy family, all of a sudden we become, you know, we became dirt poor.
Oh.
Yes. And then that was just the beginning, because the moment, you know, the government is going to become entrenched, you know, people started being arrested, and the targeted ones were intellectuals and university professors, because they were the ones that could, you know, question the government's decision. And the smarter you are, the more of a threat you would have been for the regime. So prison started being filled up with political prisoners. And then all of a sudden the phones, you know, were bugged. And the mail started to be, you know, searched, and the borders of the country were closed. And then, according to some statistics, you know, one in three Romanians was an informant for the Securitate, and that was Ceaușescu's, you know, army. But they, it's not because they wanted to, because they were blackmailed into becoming one. Because you would have done, let's say, you would steal 5 eggs and then they would catch you. So you would have two choices, either to become an informant for the Securitate or to go beyond bars. So obviously people were choosing to become an informant, and that's why one in three Romanians, you know, were working for Ceaușescu's Securitate, not because they wanted to. And I would say when people are very familiar to Franz Kafka, The Trial, I really think that the scenery in Romania was very similar. You know, people were summoned, arrested, convicted for a crime they didn't even commit. They didn't even know what they were talking about. So, you know, things got worse as the years passed by. You know, by 1980, Ceaușescu became obsessed repaying the Western loans and building himself a palace in the meantime. So that's going to lead to a shortage of available goods, you know, for the average Romanian. So by around 1984 or so, despite high crops and food production, food rationing is going to be introduced on a very wide scale. And it was promoted by Ceaușescu's regime as a mean to reduce obesity. It's like, even nowadays, I remember, it's like, this is rational eating. It's like, wow, how about if I want to eat a little bit more than what you're giving me? So all the things that people are enjoying on a daily basis, when you go to Trader Joe's or you go to Jones or you go to Ralph's or Albertson, just imagine that you would go only to one store and you would have all the necessities like bread, butter, eggs, oil, milk, beef. You would have ration portions that would become smaller and smaller from one year to another.
Wow. I'm I know that you travel the country with your book and you share your story, but, you know, I'm sure that everybody listening, either live or on replay, is feeling the same way as I am. I mean, we just take so much for granted and have no idea what hardship can truly be. I mean, this is just, you know, it's just unbelievable. And I'm sure when you were living it, you were in disbelief yourself. I mean, how did you feel when this was going on?
Well, very many times, Deb, you really don't know what kind of harsh conditions you're living in, just because you don't know how it is to be free. You really don't know what freedom is all about. And even if you've heard the word freedom, that sounds very abstract. It's like something that you haven't seen before. It's something that you've constantly been reading, but you've never touched it. It's just a belief. It's a myth. So when you are going to, we would see Ceausescu traveling to different foreign countries, and we would see how others were living in the Western world. And so we couldn't really realize what exactly should we do to change our harsh conditions. Nobody was thinking, even if, you know, people started, you know, getting in the streets several times, you know, the teeny tiny ignited movements are going to be stopped right away. So you would not really know. Those people would be killed. Their names will never come out. Their relatives would never talk about them, being afraid that something similar is going to happen to them. So there was a constant persecution of people and manipulation of their minds. And again, nobody really knew that there is another way to live your life. And just because we were reading in newspapers, I've seen and I've heard about Michael Jackson, Elizabeth Taylor, just because my family was living in Germany. So once in a blue moon, when the mail was not seized and was lost, quote unquote, meaning taken, we would get this, you know, German newspapers, and you know, we were very familiar with what's going on in England or Germany or Italy, and it was such a huge discrepancy of the conditions we were living in and what these people were enjoying. So we couldn't really put two and two together. What can we really do, you know, to get out of this? We were children of Ceausescu. You know, he was our God. In the morning, each and every day, you would go to school, Deb, and you would salute, you know, Ceausescu's picture in each and every room. So he was like the father of Romania. So, you know, it would replace my own dad, which never did. But the idea, the image was everywhere, you know, in each and every corner of the country. You would turn around, you would see his picture.
Oh, so Dr. Orat, let me just ask, I mean, it's almost embarrassing to even ask this, but if there was something that you wanted to share with somebody listening that, you know, it's all horrible. I mean, it's all horrible. It's a tragedy. It's just inconceivable. But was there something that really brought you to your knees more than another situation that was that turning point to say, you know what, I'm going to go to America, you know? Was there anything specifically that just really, really created that turning point for you to leave?
My mom, you know, my mom actually joined the Romanian, you know, Communist Party, like probably 90% of Romanians or 99.9% of Romanians. But my dad was, you know, the Greek side. So his grandparents came from Greece and settled down. So he never really wanted to join the communist regime just because they took whatever, you know, his ancestors created, built. So because he did not want to become, you know, a comrade and join the Communist Party, he was constantly, you know, searched and called for inquiries in the middle of the night. Well, the situation is going to really escalate the moment two uncles of mine are going to try to cross the borders illegally. So they are going to try to go to Bulgaria. And so they are going to be caught. They are going to be sent to prison. Gerla was a very, very known political prison. And so they are going to be sent to Gerla for 2 years. When they came out, each and every one used to weigh 80 pounds. And these were guys that when they got in, they were like 240 pounds, like in best physical shape ever. So they were constantly beaten and tortured. When they were released after another year, they tried once again. So they were caught once again. And so the third time, finally, both of them were successful. And so they are going to end up in Germany, and they are going to speak against the regime on BBC, Voice of America, and Radio Free Europe. And it was pretty much the same time when Hertha Müller, she got the Nobel Prize, you know, in 2009 for her novel, The Passport. She is also going to talk against the regime, Ceausescu's regime, it was BBC as well. And so because my uncle spoke against the regime badly, obviously, our family was blacklisted. So now each and every week my dad would be called in, you know, for more surveys, more quizzes. Whenever he would come home, we wouldn't even know if he's ever going to come home. He would be picked up in the middle of the night. There was this, you know, black car, dark car with, you know, three guys always stepping out, you know, taking my dad, and we would never really know if he's going to show up in the morning or not. And whenever he would come home, even if we had tons of questions, there were zero answers. So he could not tell us whatever, you know, they did to him or they asked him, because he was afraid that we are going to talk and then we are going to end up behind bars. So that was, you know, one of the points where I said, why do we really have to live in this fear of not knowing if my dad is going to come back alive, or we wouldn't even know what has happened to him? So I started having, I really think that because of the laws of attractions, you start thinking of a place that you would like to belong to. And I started having these premonitions that I'm going to end up across an ocean line, that the coastline is going to be filled with palm trees. And I started having this dream over and over again. And when I was 14 years old, I told my parents, I said, I know that I'm really not going to age in this country. I'm actually going to leave, and I'm going to settle down probably in the United States. Well, that was a dream because the borders were closed. So my parents looked at me and said, you know, your dream is absolutely beautiful, but it's still a dream. I said, no, it's not a dream. It's a premonition. It's a deja vu. I can picture myself being there, and it's really going to happen. Well, you know, later on, you know, after a couple of more years, it did happen. So here I am living, you know, in Los Angeles and enjoying the beautiful weather we have here and the ocean.
Wow. I just don't know how, and I know that you speak frequently about this as well, but the obstacles that you faced and the fear, and it's just gripping. And how did you still have that confidence to pursue and believe, even when your parents are saying to you, you know, or this is a beautiful dream, but it's still a dream? You know, most people would just say, yeah, that's probably right, but I'm still going to keep the dream. Yet you felt very strong that it was a divine premonition, and you trusted that, and you stuck with that. How did you do that? What do you think? What can you share with us to help us really get to that true meaning of trusting that inner voice?
Well, I always said, Deb, that we have five senses, but actually we have six, you know, and it's the sense of fear, the sense of your inner voice that is going to tell you what to do. And unfortunately, just because we are bombarded by this technological world, we are really not in tune with our inner self. So we don't, even if we have these premonitions, you know, we have these deja vus, we really don't listen to them, for we just think, oh, okay, well, it's just a sign. I don't believe in signs. I'm a grounded person. How can I believe in signs? But those signs are pretty much, it's your subconscious that it's just giving you exactly what to do. And I always said that, you know, the difference between a goal and a wish, it's a deadline. So when you are wishing, you make wishes upon others or, you know, for yourself, and you don't have a deadline, like a certain day, I'm going to lose 10 pounds by April 1st. Well, that's a wish. If you would want to make it a goal, you would have to have a deadline. So I always said, well, before the age of 30, I'm really not going to be here in this country. And my parents used to say, well, what makes you think that? And I said, I don't know. It's just that I have a vision that I'm going to leave, and I'm going to impose on myself that by a certain age, I'm going to do whatever it's in my power to leave this country. And it's not that I don't love it, but I absolutely hate the regime. So the country is beautiful, the traditions, the legends, the folklore, absolutely stunning. But I said, under these conditions, I don't want to age in this country. I just don't want to see so much suffering. I don't want to see, you know, people dying and not having the proper medication. I don't want to see people's minds being brainwashed and transformed into zombies. So I had like by a certain age I would do this, by a certain age I would do that, and it always happened that I created each and every day I came closer to my dream, and each and every day I did something to make that dream become reality. You cannot just hope that you are going to achieve something and do zero, you know, for it. You have to. It's like a house. Each and every day you are going to, you know, put another brick, and you're going to add another brick, and then one on top of the other is going to create the house you are, you know, dreaming about.
Yeah, yeah. There's, you know, the wishbone doesn't really work. It's the backbone that really is what we need, you know. Less wishbone, more backbone.
Yeah, you have to, you know, to act upon your wishes. Otherwise, they're just going to be wasted energy.
Yeah, and you know, in I think that for anybody that really wants to achieve something, no matter how large it seems or how big the obstacles seem, I think what you're sharing is just a little bit, but do something every single day to keep that vision alive and to step towards it. And do you find when you're speaking with people across the country that, you know, that's one of the problems or one of the obstacles is their inaction or just thinking if they can't do something that's major, they're not going to do anything at all? Or is it more of a gripping fear or, you know, what do you find out there with the people that you speak with?
I really think that, you know, I came with this theory, which is called the missing tile syndrome. And I said, if you would have, you know, the ceiling that would be totally immaculate and there would be one single tile that was missing, instead of concentrating on 99.9% that it's positive and bright and gleaming and there, you're going to actually concentrate on the missing tile that is just 1%. So I really think that people don't realize what they have until they're losing it all. You know, they concentrate on what they do not have, which is like 1%, which is so far-fetched. It's so teeny tiny small in comparison to what they do have, and they don't even perceive it as being there. You know, every day I say when you wake up in the morning, because living under the communist regime, all of a sudden, you know, getting to a new day, it's really a new day. So you just lived another 24 hours. So I always said that tomorrow, it's a gift. It's not a given. And when you wake up in the morning, you would have to really treat it with respect as being a gift. It's not that I'm not going to make, you know, plans for tomorrow. But if tomorrow is going to come and those plans will become reality, I'm going to be more than humble that actually they happen.
Mm. Wow, you just said so much right there. It's more than self-help. It's just a whole new way of thinking. I mean, you just talked about the gratitude, which I think the level of entitlement, I think it's a bad disease that is just sucking the life out of the soul of society. Everybody is so busy and not being grateful, and I love that, the one tile, that's a trademark for sure. And I can see it. I mean, it's a great visual, Dr. Orr, because it's true. You can have this huge building with, you know, thousands of tiles, but if there's one missing, that's the one that you're going to be looking at. And no, what you're saying is just so much to be grateful for. You know, what about, so much, I think, of our world is shrinking, and we're able to, with some of the social media, to see these things. For example, in Japan, or listening to your story, people tonight that are able to listen or downloading to their mobile device while, you know, they're doing something tomorrow, and just really changing that mindset to really understand that there's things outside of ourselves that exist. And maybe not all of us suffer, you know, to one degree or another. Not all of us are suffering to the extent of your story or the people in Japan and some of these other things that we read about and hear about. But the human condition involves some suffering, and we can all relate and have compassion on that level. But not everybody is able to make that bridge and transition, as you've written about in what you speak about, in to make it something that can be a gift, to use that tragedy, to use that challenge, to use that horror to be a springboard to live a better life today and tomorrow and to help others as well. What do you think, you know, are the top three things that help you do that so well?
Well, I always said that to be curious. I mean, I would totally define myself, you know, through one single word. I mean, being curious, because curiosity, it's going to open up 10,000 doors for you. You are going to become, you know, be in touch with other people. And because you are curious to get to know them, you are going to get to know yourself. So curiosity can bring, you know, unseen opportunities. And, you know, sometimes they are way bigger than what you really, you know, you are looking for. I was, you know, talking to my students about serendipity. And I said, you know, so many times we just have this vision and we don't even see what it's surrounding us. So the moment you are going to actually see the forest and not the tree in front of you, you know, you are going to be able to share with others what you actually already have. Because we are so much concerned with our own being. And that's, you have to be concerned, because the only way you can change the world is to start changing yourself first. And that's the hardest thing to do.
Yes, and I know. I have a hard time getting along with me some days, just me alone. So to get along with everybody else perfectly is a challenge. But, you know, I think about that statement, you know, the one finger pointed at you and the three fingers pointing back at me, you know. I mean, you really need... You need to pay attention to yourself. And, you know, we get so focused in somebody else's business, and there's more than enough to fill my plate for the day, the things that I need to focus on. And, you know, and I think that, you know, in the spirit of giving to help someone else, you know, that's when we should be getting involved in somebody else's business.
Exactly. And when people are saying, well, have you heard about so-and-so? I mean, people start being jealous. I'm like, well, you know, to feel jealousy means that you're spending way too much time checking someone else's out instead of checking yourself, you know? I said, I don't really care what my neighbors are doing. I don't even know if they're married or divorced or who they're sleeping with. I said, I'm way too focused and too busy with my personal life to really notice what's going on. I mean, of course, you know, I can always go and reach out to them and help them out. But the moment you are going to feel like you are some sort of a disadvantage, then you are focusing too much on others instead of you. And
yeah.
I said, it doesn't really matter. I mean, we're always going to be on a society scale depth. It doesn't really matter how beautiful you are. You're always going to have people that are going to be way more beautiful or less more beautiful. And it doesn't really matter how intelligent you are. You're always going to have people that are going to be way more intelligent or less or way more powerful or, you know, way more successful than you are. And if I'm always going to look at the ones that are above and kind of like envy them, I mean, I'm going to have a horrendous life, you know, instead of looking up to them and then trying to help out the ones that are underneath me. I mean, that's the only way I can move up on the society scale.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, the compare and despair syndrome, that's another bad thing to do, you know, because it never works. It's so bad. It's true, because there's always somebody else. But, you know, I love your attitude, the visual that comes to me when you have that antibiotic for being envious and focusing on the generosity. I can just think of, you know, the sunshine and the beach. Everybody gets that suntan. And knowing that somebody else has been blessed or really successful, you know, it's like the sun. There's enough generosity for everybody to have more than enough. And, you know, I really think that your whole mindset and what you focus on and your deliberate action to be present in your own life and to really live in that 24-hour period, as horrible as this terrible tragedy is that you're sharing with us tonight, and your book is going to be a great movie. I can see it now. I'm going to be there, you know, saying, remember me on the Best People We Know radio show. You know, I really think that you in a very ironic type of way, that tragedy gave you the training for your mind to focus on those things that would help you live, you know, the life that you're living now, because you had to survive 24 hours. Hence, you now look at the 24 hours. You didn't even have the freedom to know if your dad was going to be taken away from you or the mail was censored. Hence, you appreciate every single day with the loved ones that you have around you. You didn't have the opportunity to learn everything or read everything, even as you said, the Elizabeth Taylor or the Michael Jackson. So now what have you done? You've gone gotten more degrees than, you know, most people I've ever met. And now you're teaching. I mean, all of those things that you didn't have before, you've, you know, gone ahead and achieved. And I think that hopefully what I'm really hoping people listening to you will say, and I'm going to include myself in this too, is, you know, don't wait. Don't wait for the tragedy. Don't wait for that suffering. Don't wait. You know, learn from others. You can't make all those mistakes yourself, you know? And I think that especially with the young people, too, or any age, you know, the world needs mentors like you because we need a real shift, an attitude shift, I think. We're starving for it right now, desperately.
And, you know, unfortunately, you know, I'm always using, you know, the word tsunami, but unfortunately right now it's just, you know, in connection to Japan. But I always said you don't have to wait for a tsunami to hit you, you know, to change your attitude. You have to take, you know, into consideration each and every wave that is going to hit, you know, the shore of your life. And with each and every wave, you are just bettering yourself a little bit more. You don't have to wait for a shaking earthquake that it's like, okay, beginning with tomorrow, I'm going to take care of my health. I'm going to, you know, go to the gym every day. I'm going to love each and every person. It's like things are not happening overnight. You know, we cannot change overnight. So if we want to better ourselves, you know, it has to be, it's going to be a lengthy process. It's not, you're not going to be a sprinter. You're going to be a marathon runner. And so when you're going to run the marathon, each and every mile is going to count, you know, towards the end of your race. And that's what we really have to understand. And when I have students of mine, they're like, well, it's not fair because this person, you know, has more and then I have less. And I said, listen, you know, do you really think we're equal? And then they say, yes. I said, no, we are not. I said, all men are created equal, right? Because if you're really considering the Declaration of, you know, Independence in, you know, 1776, yes, we are created equally, you know. But we don't want to be treated equally because, you know, some of us are going to put, you know, more effort into doing something and others are going to be put, you know, are going to place more, you know, less on that one. Do you want to be considered equal to the ones that it's not going to school or do you want to be considered equal to the one that it's not working, it's just switching the TV channels? I said, you want to be considered unique because you are unique. So you want to be treated the way you are, not in comparison to anybody else.
Mm. You know, and you really hit, you know, you touched on that so beautifully because sometimes and with the students, I can just see you. I want to be in your classroom. When I grow up, I want to be just like you. You know, there's just so much to that to really think about. Do we really, what we want, are we defining, are we selecting the right words? Because sometimes what we think we want is not what we want or what we need. And, you know, part of that awareness is, you know, I think the discipline of doing what you said at the beginning of the time together here tonight, which is being in quiet, to know who you are, to pay attention to what you're thinking, feeling, your self-talk, what's going on, your dreams, your inspirations. And, you know, being quiet is really the classroom that will tell us what we need to hear. Sounds as though that's something that you would encourage.
Definitely. And, you know, my mom passed away, you know, because of cancer. And I, you know, I realized that, you know, for someone that is healthy, you know, each and every year when, you know, New Year's comes around, and so we have this long list of wishes and resolutions, you know, I want a better car, I want to travel left and right, you know, I want a new boyfriend, I want a bigger house, I want to be acknowledged by everybody, you know, and then someone that is struggling, you know, with cancer has only one wish, Deb, to get better. And so that's pretty much the most important thing. It's health. It's your inner life that really, really counts. Everything else, they are just material possessions that, you know, they are going to come in contact with us and they are going to leave us no matter what. Or we are going to leave them because we really don't take anything with us, you know, when we are going to pass away. So we spend too much time, you know, gathering all these material possessions that we don't even, you know, we don't need them, you know, instead of concentrating on who we are.
Yeah, and you know what? You've had,
it all and you've had nothing, and, you know, to think that you have a lot and then the government could come in and take it away,
yeah,
or the tsunami. I mean, you know, we have this false illusion that there's security in something, and it's really just that, it's false. And you know, you talk about your mom, and my mom passed away of cancer as well, and she was my best friend, and I tell you, I'd give anything, any amount of money, anything to be with her. I miss her. Not a day goes by that I just don't miss her tremendously, because that's something that is priceless. And you know, I think about, I love all these little quotes, but I think it was Ebbett Hubbard who said, you know, don't take life too seriously because you're not going to get out alive anyway. And
yeah,
you know, it's we're not going to take anything. And I, you know, tonight has been such a gift. I can't believe we're down to 5 minutes, and I want to make sure we give out your web address and how to connect with you, and how we're all excited so that we can see you with the Pulitzer Prize winning book and in the movie theater. We'll all be there in the fan clubs. We'll be there with our signs, Dr. Ora. It'll be great.
Thank you so much, Debbie. So sweet. Thank you.
You are amazing. And I know that for anybody listening, if you're feeling the way I am, you know, when you hear Dr. Ora speak, you know it's from the heart. It's authentic. She's real. And she's telling us things that we need to hear. And you need to share this show with someone. You need to replay this yourself, whether you get it on iTunes, which it'll be in 24 hours on iTunes, or listening to it here, putting it on your mobile device. You need to share this show with a friend, and people need to hear Dr. Ora's story. This is a gift, and there's no accidents, and this is why you're here tuning in tonight. So tell us your website and how, where we can hook up with you if people, you know, your schedule's very busy, but, you know, tell us where we can find you and get the book and all of that.
Well, I mean, I have a very, very easy website. Besides my name, you know, both of them, one is TransylvaniaKnight.com, and that one is going to take you straight to my book. And then I have, you know, my name, which is Aura Imbarus, AuraImbarus.com. And the book, it's available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble's online, and Barnes & Noble's stores, and also Borders and Borders online. So the book has been out, and it can be purchased, and I'm definitely looking forward to hearing, you know, people's opinion and their reactions in regards to the book.
Oh, well, believe me. You know,
they can always email me. I mean, it's aurainbarus@yahoo.com, and I'm always going to respond to each and every email that I get.
Yes, and you're on all the social networks, too, and we
can
find your beautiful face everywhere, Facebook and all of that, and you are there, and it's just wonderful. You are just such a gift. You are such a blessing, and I know that you will continue to be blessed. And I know that Pulitzer, that's coming up. We're going to follow you for that, too. That's in May, you find out about that?
It is in May, yes, and as I said, it's exactly in May when, in 1997, I came, I first landed, you know, in California, in the United States. So it's just so interesting because it's once again the same month that it's going to be given out. And Joseph Pulitzer was a Hungarian, you know, born immigrant. And I have Hungarian blood as well, besides Greek and Romanian and German. So I just don't believe in coincidences, okay? I really think that whatever has to happen will happen no matter what.
Yes, and you really inspire us all to really tap into the, you know, the authentic part of our heart and to live that with zeal. And I love your quote, and I mean, it's just so wonderful, and I think I'm going to read it again. I'm going to close with this wonderful quote that you have, because I enjoy my own show, so I'm going to read your quote
and
again.
And I'm enjoying your show as well.
Yeah, we're the best people. We're all here. We're all inspiring, cheering each other on. Good fan club, Mutual Admiration Society. I'm just going to leave everybody with this final thought from Dr. Ora, and make sure you go out and get her book. Let's follow her with her Pulitzer Prize. You know, email her, get to her website, oraimbarus.com, and she'll come back and tell us how she's doing. But I'm just going to close out with this wonderful quote. I want to live life to the fullest, says Dr. Ora, and in the process to help others along the way. I want to squeeze out each and every moment of life and use it to the maximum, because every day has the potential of a lifetime. What a blessing you are. Thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank
you are
such, so much.
Such a gift. And really don't know what else to say except just God bless you and thank you so very much. And website one more time for the listeners.
TransylvaniaKnight.com. TransylvaniaKnight.com.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Deb, and keep in touch.
I will, because I know where you are, and we're all going to be here.
And I know where to find you.
That's right. I'm in the cold weather that has no palm trees in the greater Boston area. So,
well, you can always come and visit me.
Oh, you might not want to be putting that on the airwaves.
Well, you know, maybe others can listen too, and they can come and visit us as well.
That's right. And we'll all be there when you get your Pulitzer, that's for sure. And I just want to just thank you again and thank all the listeners. You're making the show a success, and we're just really growing really well. And if it wasn't for the people being here listening, we wouldn't be able to have great guests like Dr. Ora, who can change our life and really help us be the best person that we were created to be. So thank you for another great evening with the Best People We Know radio show. Have a blessed night, and we will see you here next week. And good night. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.